Hi everyone, if we could come together to start the session now. So welcome to this meeting, the CWG meeting to develop the IANA stewardship transition and the proposal on naming related functions. Okay, just give us one moment to get the recording going. I'll wait for a confirmation until we've got the recording going. So in advance of that, I'll apologize to you for this small room. It's just the way it's been scheduled, so hopefully everyone who needs to can fit in and participate. There are a couple of seats I'll see, perhaps at the table, but okay, we're good to go with the recording now. So my name is Jonathan Robinson. I'm here together with Byron Holland. We were co-chairs of the drafting team. And I will remain as a co-chair of the community working group to do this work to develop the IANA stewardship transition proposal on naming related functions. So we, as you know, the group is structured to enable as broad as possible full participation, and so to that extent it's open to participation from anyone, but there is a structure where there are members from the different chartering organizations, and to make sure that we have an understanding of who is here as members from those chartering organizations, we're going to run a quick roll call just to record who is present. So Grace, if I could ask you to sort that out, please.
Hi, everyone. So we're not going to do a full roll call. I've passed around little sheets like this. If you check your name off, that's how we'll note your attendance. I will do a roll call for the members who are present. So if the ALAC members, Sun, Fouad, Olivier, Fatima, and Eduardo could please raise their hands to indicate that they're present. Two, okay. Could the CCNSO members, Lise, Eric, Paul, Vika, and Stefan, raise their hand, please? Okay. Could the GAC members, Elise and Wanawit, please raise their hands? Thank you. Could the GNSO members, Jonathan, Greg, Graham, and Avri, please raise their hands? Thank you. And could the SAC members, Robert and Yap, please raise their hand? Thank you. We're all set. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you and welcome again. My name is Byron Holland, and I'm from the CCNSO, CCNSO chair, and was the co-chair of the drafting team. I will continue to be a participant in this CWG. Jonathan and I, as well as other members of the drafting team, had discussed how we wanted this group to come together and set out some cultural norms. Obviously, the time is short for us, and the work is significant and substantive. And in order to make sure from a logistical perspective that we are able to come to the end goal at the time that we envision, we thought it would be important to articulate what we would like to call some cultural norms for this working group. And recognizing that we've only discussed it in these very, very early days, and that this working group will continue to evolve and develop its cultural norms, we wanted to put out a few elements that we thought would help us move forward with the substantive work in the time that we have allocated. First, I think it will be the intention, or the co-chairs will certainly put forward the intention to rotate the meetings from a timing perspective so that it is reasonable and that we all share an equal amount of pain for late night calls, et cetera, so that there will be a rotating meeting schedule from a timing perspective. Also, given the very diverse, geographically diverse representation that we have for the members of this working group, that we would not expect to take firm decisions without the substance of those decisions having been articulated and discussed over the course of two meetings. so that for those who potentially are not able to make a meeting, that any substantive decision would have the opportunity to be discussed at a second time slot. So I think that will be important for this group going forward. And recognizing also that the members of this working group have been appointed or elected by their various constituencies according to their own processes to represent the views of that community into this process in this working group. But just to remind us all that it's not just that, that this is a two-way communication process, and that the members of this group and the participants more broadly are expected to flow back into their communities the information and the discussions and the decisions that have happened within this working group. So just a reminder to all of our members and our participants that this is a two-way dialogue, bringing input into this group and sharing information back out of this group. So trying to set the stage for a successful outcome, we would like to suggest, as having been the co-chairs to this point, that those would be some basic cultural norms that this working group would hopefully adhere to and would therefore facilitate a successful outcome in the time that we have available to us. I just did want to pick up to make clear on something that Jonathan had said. Jonathan will be continuing to co-chair this working group. I am co-chairing just this first meeting, and then we'll be stepping back to be a participant going forward and enabling one of my colleagues from the CC community to step into the role of co-chair. That person hasn't been identified yet, but will be identified shortly. And with that, Jonathan?
Thanks, Byron. So I guess there's one other principle of operation for today's meeting. If I can try and encourage all participants in the meeting to focus as much as possible on any substantive issues, there will inevitably be procedural points, but to the extent that we can deal with those in other ways other than with the valuable face-to-face time, that would be appreciated. Are there any comments or inputs or, frankly, additions to those principles of operation that anyone would like to make? Any further input on that? All right, well, it sounds like it's a sort of a useful set of mechanics to work with. Byron touched on point three, of course, which is this confirming the mechanisms, at least for the leadership. We did discuss on our previous call the possibility of introducing vice chairs, and I think my suggestion here is that we retain that open as a possibility. We can start off operating immediately, and given, again, the recognized time pressures that we need to get going with this work, I suggest we move forward with the co-chair structure, but remain open to any proposals for vice chairs to come in from the other chartering organizations. So item four has us then looking at the revised timeline, and I think it would be useful to get that up and start to understand the mechanics of what's involved there. And
this is Marika. Maybe just a note as well, if it's difficult to read from where you're sitting, the document will also be uploaded into the Adobe Connect room. So there you can zoom in and zoom out as appropriate.
So perhaps it's useful to talk through the timeline. Marika, are you willing or able or expecting to do that?
Yes. So this is Marika. As you may recall, on our first meeting, we had an initial draft timeline that we put together outlining some of the basic steps that we foresee based on the chart and as well as, of course, the RFP of the ICG. We had some feedback at that point from Elisa in relation to the deadline, which is currently, I think, 15th of January, asking whether there was any kind of flexibility in that regard. And I think we got the indication that there was very little flexibility, but maybe a little bit. So we've revised the timeline to actually have a proposal delivered at the latest by the 31st of January, and we're hoping that that is something that is acceptable to the ICG. And on the basis of that, work backwards to look at where that would take us in relation to the different steps of the process. So basically, I think, as you all know, one of the requirements according to the Charter is to have an initial report that goes out for public comment. So there's the first major milestone that is in there. Based, again, on the timeline that we have in front of us, which I think we all recognize is extremely short, we did at this stage suggest to maybe shorten the original public comment form from 41 or 42-day period to 21 to allow for substantial time as well for the work for the group to actually develop their proposals as well as review the input received from all the communities. And again, I think one of the reasons why we want to have such a timeline early on in the process is that we can basically put everyone as well on notice on what is coming, because this will really require everyone coming together and being aware of what the timing and timelines are so that everyone can plan accordingly for that. So on the basis of that, it currently foresees that an initial report would be published by the 1st of December, which would basically mean, let me count, 6 weeks approximately to actually, well, 7 weeks if we count this week as well, to actually develop the initial proposal that would then go out for public comment for a 21-day period, and following which the CWG would actually already start reconvening at the same time to actually start looking at what input is being received as the public comment forum is open. We've also foreseen a number of webinars, for example, again, to maximize outreach and really make sure that people understand that it's really important to obtain input from a broad number of participants on this process. So after the public comment forum closes, it foresees then a number of meetings that are used by the CWG to review the input received, take that into account, modify the proposal as appropriate, and then basically takes us to early January and foresees a submission of the proposal to the chartering organizations for adoptions through their respective processes by the 19th of January. And again, of course, this foresees again that all chartering organizations foresee their processes to align with this schedule to be able to allow to consider and adopt proposals as accordingly. And that would hopefully get us then to the 31st of January with a final proposal that could be submitted to the ICG. So I think this is what we currently have as a draft proposal, mainly being driven by the deadline of 31st of January for submission of a final transition proposal.
Thanks, Marika. So it's undoubtedly an extremely aggressive timetable. We've taken it as read, save for the representation we made to the RFP and the exchange to the ICG and the exchange of letters, and have accepted at this point that a 2-week extension to the originally proposed deadline is possible, and are going to try and work towards that. Clearly what that throws up is then the mechanics of how we try and meet that timetable, which is envisaged via a series of weekly meetings, and the whole mechanics of how those meetings work will need to be, we'll need to operate those according to some quite challenging principles, producing the outputs, reviewing those outputs, and being in a position to deal with them substantially on each successive call. As Byron said, recognizing that should a decision be taken, we'll create the opportunity for that decision to be brought back to the meeting at least once, once again, if necessary, if a member has been unable to, for whatever reason, sign off on that, but we would encourage everyone to work towards those principles of operation whereby we work through this as speedily as possible. One of the things, Chuck, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. I think it'd be really helpful for us to hear from a representative of each of the sponsoring organizations regarding the 10-day, or I guess it's 11 days, that they would have to approve any recommendations are made. So I'm looking at the next to last row of the schedule there. That seems very difficult. And I personally would like to hear from the, certainly from you two and your organizations, as well as the GAC and SSAC, if you can, and ALAC, and with regard to, I mean, is that even realistic in some cases to give a 10-day turnaround for approval? And then the second point with regard to this schedule, and I'm not trying to say we shouldn't be as aggressive as possible in getting this done, it seems to me that the toughest part we're going to have as a working group is the accountability piece. And to get that piece done and to coordinate with the other work that's going on and hasn't even started, I'm kind of baffled how that can happen. I think this, just putting that aside, this is an aggressive schedule. When you add in the accountability work, and I'm not saying we shouldn't try to work towards this, but it seems very difficult to do the accountability part of it in this time frame as well. But again, first of all, I'd be really curious to think, what is it realistic in 11 days for each of the sponsoring organizations to approve whatever recommendations we come up with?
So while the respondents to that question, a good question, think about that, I mean, there's certainly, I lost my train of thought now. I can see. Olivier, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. Olivier Capanov, launcher of the ALAC. I think that the document, if the document was to just come up without any prior notice, and a document that, of course, no one would have read by the 20th of January, it would be extremely difficult to get our community in at large to comment on it or to actually agree to it within 10 days. That said, there are previous or there would be, hopefully at that time, several previous versions of that same document. So the only things that would have to be carefully looked at would be just the modifications and the reviews and the amendments which were made based on the comments that were received previously. So as far as the ALAC is concerned, I'm not too concerned, too worried about the adoption in 10 days. We would have to conduct a vote on this, which would be a 5-day vote. As long as the document is provided to the ALAC perhaps earlier than those 10 days, or draft documents, 80%, 90% done, would be provided to the ALAC, this is something we could play with. But I'm particularly concerned, though, about the rest of the schedule, the timetable, which looks extremely tight indeed, and certainly having it running in parallel or somehow connected with the accountability process looks like a real, real challenge.
So, thanks, Olivia. I know, Greg, you want to speak, but just to make a point of clarification, Chuck, I mean, it is not intended that this group does substantial work on the accountability. That's the work of the of another group to be chartered. Is that your understanding? And the assumption, the understanding I have is that the work of this group will need to be coordinated with that group and linked to it, but it's not that the substance of that work on accountability will be done in this group.
Well, the Chuck again. Jonathan, what I've heard almost unanimous from the community is that accountability has to happen before the transition happens, so I guess I don't assume the same thing you're assuming.
We're talking at cross purposes. I'm not in disagreement with that point, but just that the work isn't done in this group.
Okay, so Chuck again. The SOs and ACs are supposed to approve our recommendations without knowing that some accountability, I guess they can do it conditionally. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, they need to, in effect, what this says is that there would be a parallel equivalent timetable that would need to be in which that work would need to be done. I've got Greg and then Elise.
Greg Shatton from the IPC and CSG and the GNSO. 2 points. First, following up on the accountability point, if we're talking here about replacing the IANA, the functions of the NTIA, one of those functions in regard to the IANA functions is a function of accountability. So not sure that how we're going to be able to, where we're going to kind of cut off what is our responsibility regarding accountability, and what is the responsibility of the larger kind of governance and accountability discussion, which in many ways, you know, may involve things that go beyond what the NTIA currently offers in terms of accountability. But if we're talking here about what does a world post NTIA look like, I'm not sure that accountability is truly off the table here. Secondly, I would point out that in terms of timing, the first time that we would really be looking at a document with our communities would be prior to the 1st of December publishing of the draft transition proposal. So, you know, back in that time there, we have our last deliberation on the 24th of November. So maybe it's proposed that the draft would be circulated back to the stakeholder groups and ACs for approval before that's published. I don't think we would, at least in, you know, in GNSO land, would not you know, publish a draft proposal without going back to our constituents. I would also note that I believe that's the American Thanksgiving week, so that will also add a little extra challenge. Thank you.
Okay, I've got a hand up in the Adobe, and
thank you. Just a comment. I see that there has been sent out a transcript of the discussion we had in the GAC on Saturday. And then there you will see we discussed the timeline quite thoroughly. And we had, of course, we have a challenge that we have to deliver and produce a result before the next face-to-face meeting in Marrakesh. That's a challenge itself for the GAC, who works on a face-to-face meeting basis, and that we also cannot speak on behalf of other countries and so on and so forth. You know that the GAC has procedures on this. And 2 weeks additional time is not much, but okay. I just want to emphasize that we have to consult results and reports with the administrations at home. So just to say that 10 days is a very, very short time. But we don't have a conclusion on how to respond to the timeline now. We have to discuss a bit more in the GAC, I think, this week, now that we heard and will hear more for the rest of you on the timeline. Okay, thank you.
Sir, we're going to come up this side. So the gentleman at the very end, because you did actually put your hands up as far as I could see, in sequence. So we're going to work our way down the three people on this side.
Okay, thank you. This is Sean from Afralo, Alak. I'd like to re-echo what Greg said in relation to the accountability process. I think the outcome from that accountability side will determine how fast we get a plus one from our communities. On the timeline, if we have an idea of what the accountability outcome is going to look like, I'm sure it will be fast. It will make it faster for the communities to give a plus one on the proposal that comes out of this working group. That being said, I'd like to make a comment, one or two comments on the timeline. December is a very, very crucial, in fact, it's usually half a month. From the 15th, you you hardly see people get to work as fast as possible because it's usually an anniversary month. I don't know how easy it's going to be to move within from public comments and straight into consideration by the community. So I think I would suggest a week should be put in between 19th. So before, so after the public comment on the 19th, I suggest a week should be put in between to actually have the final document that gets given to the communities to go and discuss. Because it's not going to be easy to be getting new comments on a particular, on the draft, and still discussing these new comments with the community. It's because it's not going to be just us here. So I think it would be better we get the actual document that we'll get to discuss with the community before. And I also suggest that if we could have a two-faced comment period, I think it's very important. After we got a comment from the larger community, the update of that comment, we have to resend it because it goes beyond just this our immediate working group. So I think if we could have two-faced comment period, it would be really helpful in this process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I just take this moment to remind everybody that when you speak, as the group is getting to know each other, can you identify what group you're from, what your affiliation is, and your name, please, just before you get started. And for the transcript, just remembering there are a number of people online who don't have the benefit of seeing us.
I hope I did. I think I did.
You did. I'm strictly saying it as a reminder. Thank you very much. You set the example by which the rest of us need to continue to follow. Thank you. Robert.
It's Robert Guerra for the transcript from the ESSAC. Just wanted to reply very quickly to a couple of the comments. In regards to the schedule and adoption by the ESSAC, usually we have a period of about 5 to 7 days, if I'm not mistaken. I think what's key, though, is that we circulate and share drafts that can be circulated with them, so those comments can be shared. But our approval process tends to be about 5 days or so. I think in regards to the earlier comments, in regards to accountability, I think it's going to be important to hear from everyone here. Is the parallel group that's being set up, will that feed into this group, and will this group have to review those results, or will it report out separately? That being said, because our timeline is really short, I think we should identify what are things that we can produce ourselves, develop that text, and if we have to wait for processes, not wait, but actually produce some of the text. And then again, going into the adoption phase, I think it's really important to highlight and to make sure everyone knows what texts are going to be internal for this group and when they can be shared with some of the groups. So we just are very clear that, so we can go back to our groups and things like that. And so I think it's a general comment, as I've shared on the list with some of you. We do have a very tight timeline and identifying when we can start developing some texts that we have consensus on, then we should do so. And if we need to meet again this week in some capacity, then we should do so, because face-to-face time is rare and incredibly valuable. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Since accountability in general is definitely a topic of discussion at this moment, I would just like to remind all that the charter by which this group is chartered is fairly specific on this subject, and of course I'd encourage you to just refamiliarize yourself with that, as well as in terms of a timing and what we're delivering to. It is in delivering to an RFP set forth by the ICG. So both of those things, of course, I just encourage everybody to be very, very familiar with, because that sets to some degree the scope and timing of our work. But on accountability, there is specific language and guidance in the charter itself. I believe we're going to Milton now. And sorry, there is. Then we're going to go to Becky, who is on online after.
Yeah, this is Milton Mueller. I'm a professor at Syracuse University, part of the GNSO, and also on the ICG. I just am a little bit concerned at the way in which you are getting bogged down in process again. Not that that ever happens to the GNSO or the CCNSO, but first of all, this is not an ICANN PDP, okay? You don't have to follow any particular preordained process. Secondly, the time requirements are not arbitrary. They are grounded in certain political and organizational realities. Third, it seems like your mindset is too stuck in past practices. So this idea of going back to your own community and getting consensus at that level, why does that have to happen at all? Your community people should put you in this spot to do the work. You should do the work, and then when you have a draft, you send it before the entire community, not a bunch of little silos that think that they're all acting independently of you. There should be one general public comment period on our draft. GAC can respond to that either individually or collectively. The SOs can respond to that. Individuals can respond. Anybody can respond to it. Why are you talking about this siloized framework in which everybody independently goes to their community and then comes back and you renegotiate again? I just don't get it. We don't have time for that. And the main point I want to make is that you really need to start talking about the substance, about what is accountability, how is it going to work post-NTIA. This is going to be the last face-to-face meeting you have before the deadline, is it not? Now, of course, you can do conference calls and so on, but hopefully at some point in this meeting, this group will be talking about the substance, the real issues that have to be addressed regarding the transition.
Thank you. Becky Burr, online.
I want to respond to Milton as well.
Is Becky going to speak to us virtually, or is it text-based?
No, I'm speaking, I hope. Can you hear me?
Byron, let me respond to a couple of points from Milton there. I mean, certainly this you're right. We given the aggressive nature of the timescale, we need to be as innovative as we can, and whilst recognizing that there may be constraints, but I certainly think your suggestions are well taken. I do think we have the opportunity, and we've discussed, I mean, there's a number of things we've picked up on. One was the timeline originally, and the initial pushback got us the 2 weeks. There may well be some more work to be done there, but for the moment, the working assumption has been that this 31st of January deadline exists. The second is it possible to have some face-to-face meetings, one or more, in between now and the end of that timeline? We've talked with ICANN about providing the resources to do that, and there is a proposal that we've got to be able to do something like that. But certainly one of those meetings would need to take place before the end of the year. If there's another one, we may need to do something in January. And the willingness and ability to support a face-to-face meeting, I don't think it's... We've got in excess of 90... combined participants and members. So I think the reality of relocating all of those 90 participants to one location is probably too ambitious. But certainly I think we could comfortably say we could bring the members together and have the participants facilitate the participation of the participants as best as possible via the various remote tools at our disposal. So that is a realistic possibility, and I think we need to put out a proposal for a date for that and a location based on the location of the members and get something like that out as soon as possible. Now, if participants did want to participate in person, there's no reason why that should be not permitted. There should be every reason to encourage that. But there are certain logistical issues, like whether they'd be able to... I mean, ICANN's offered to fund the travel of the members to participate in person. We would need to know if other participants were planning to attend, how in advance so that we could secure the right facilities for an enlarged group. But that's possible, and in fact, in my opinion, something that's necessary rather than possible. So those are some responses. I'm not sure if Becky is available.
I think Becky is ready to go. Becky?
Yes, can you hear me now? Can you hear me? Apparently not.
So apparently the people on the phone can hear her talking. Unfortunately, we aren't hearing her in here yet. So perhaps, Becky, if you can hear us, which I believe you can, you could type in your question, and then I will read it out on your behalf until hopefully we can get the logistics coordinated.
So I suggest the point about substance and process, I mean, clearly we've got to get the process right so that it accommodates the participation and substantial input. But it feels to me like we've taken some significant input on the timeline and logistics, and maybe we should move now on to item 5, which is to review the RFP and to remind everyone that the basis of this work is in response to an RFP from the ICG. So it's perhaps worth expanding that out. And you'll see that's done for you now on the slide up above, is to actually segment out the detail on that, on the RFP.
I've got Becky's comment.
Okay.
Just before we move on to that, I did want to read out Becky Burr's comment, which is to respond in particular to Milton and remind the group that the drafting team itself spent a considerable amount of time discussing the process piece, and in particular the need to go back to the sponsoring organizations for approval. So that was something that the drafting team spent time on and had a very intentional discussion about. So that's why it ended up there. Take your points. That's a personal comment, not Becky's comment. But Becky's just reminding us that there was significant discussion about that at the drafting team level.
So I'm not sure if there's anyone from the ICG who might be willing to talk to this. We haven't prepared anyone, but I don't know if there's anyone in the room who's available and be willing to talk to these key components of the RFP.
There's Elisa behind you.
There's a mic right there.
Yes, for participants, and that does bear mention, for participants who are sitting around the room, just as you can see, we have a stand-up mic if you wish to make a comment.
Better? So I'm Alyssa Cooper. I guess I'm from the technical community. I don't know how I would identify myself, and I can usually. And I'm the chair of the ICG. So what you see on the screen are the six sections of the RFP that we put out in September for all of the operational communities. And the first couple of items are fairly self-explanatory. We just ask that the community give some background on how it uses whichever of the IANA functions its proposal is aimed at. So for this community, it would be names. We'd like a description of the existing arrangements pre-transition, both the ways that policy is developed and also the existing oversight and accountability mechanisms. The policy part obviously is not really in scope for the transition, but we just want to have it complete so that everyone's on the same page in terms of understanding what the policy processes are. The third part is the proposed post-transition oversight and accountability mechanism. So this is the section where you say, here's what we're proposing in terms of what we think needs to be in place after the transition occurs. The next part is the transition implications. So this covers things like what the operational implications might be of the proposed transition measures, what legal framework needs to be in place for the transition to be successful, what some of the risks are to the continuity in operations, those kinds of things. Then we have a section where we'd like the community to explain how they met the criteria set out by NTIA in its original announcement in the development of this community's proposal. And then we also have a section where we want reporting on what process the community followed, so all the things that you guys have been talking about today, and the level of consensus that was achieved before sending the proposal to the ICG. Is that good?
Thank you, Alyssa, for responding to that. So maybe if you could just hang around at the mic in case there are any questions or comments or requirements for clarification. Everyone happy with that setting the agenda? Okay, Robert.
It's Robert Guerra again. Alyssa, if you could just maybe specify in terms of point number three, the accountability arrangements, as was mentioned before, how much do we need to develop and how much might come from the parallel process that's working on that as well? Thank you.
Sure. This is Alyssa again. So this RFP was generic. It was issued to all of the operational communities, not just this one, which means that it doesn't speak specifically to the fact that there are separate parallel processes, which is something that's happening in the naming world but is not necessarily happening in the other communities. So it doesn't really give specific guidance, as far as I can remember. I will say that it's insofar as there are parallel processes here, there is somewhat of a similar precedent, at least I know in the protocol parameters community, which might be of help to folks here. So in the protocol parameters community and in the IETF, we handle there's separate entities that handle different aspects of the IETF's operation. We have a separate entity that handles issues related to intellectual property and contracting. And so the way that the process is running in the IETF is that the working group developing the proposal is including in its proposal guidance to those other bodies that say, we'd like this to be part of the transition plan, but we know that it's not within our purview. And so that might be a model that could be considered here, where this group says, overall, these are the accountability mechanisms that we think we need. Some of them are specific to ICANN, and we think those need to be handled by this parallel process. And so you can kind of join the two by sort of pointing at each other. That's sort of the path that we're going down the IETF. Hope that helped.
Any other comments, questions on this item five? Chuck.
Thanks, Chuck Gomes from the registries. And this isn't a question, so you're free. But this is a suggestion. It seems to me that sections one and two of the RFP are something that we should be able to get done. In fact, if we could have at least a rough draft of those before next week, I think that would really help us, and especially Section 2, because in that description of the existing processes is that part that NTIA does where we're going to have to zero our focus, and it would help us focus where we really need to focus rather than some of the administrative and straightforward details. So my suggestion is that we make it a goal to get some volunteers to write, and we already have one on the list, and I won't talk for him. Alan volunteered to start some of this, and some of us from the GNSO may need to help in that regard. But that's something very concrete that we could get going after we leave this meeting today.
I'm just going to say I think that's a very good suggestion. And without trying to do a volunteer call right here in this meeting, I think immediately after this face-to-face, we will put that call for volunteers on the list. And since Alan works with me at CIRA in Canada, I know for a fact he's going to be willing to to work on this, but obviously encourage other folks who would be willing to go through this critical work in terms of surfacing what we know to be true today and making it available and accessible to the broader group will be very important baseline work to get us going. I think that's a good suggestion, Chuck. Thank you.
Yeah, agreed. And it seems to lead us nicely into item 6 on the agenda anyway, which I think Alan's done some work there already. So I suggest that we have a look at that and make the call for volunteers to join him on the list, as you suggest, Byron, but we might as well just go straight in and have a look at some of these key points here and now in terms of substance. Alan, would you like to walk us through that?
Thank you, Jonathan. It's Alan McGilvery with .ca, the CC community. I'll just say, in respect of the previous item, I did volunteer on the list. So if anyone wants to join me, that would be most welcome. I know that SSAC has produced a couple of documents, so they could be good kind of source text to start populating that. So I want to acknowledge the work of SSAC in that area and see if we can work with that as well. So IANA contract. So this is really what we're here to talk about. The IANA transition, I think, if we look at the actual contract itself, it is 65 pages, but it's not actually that formidable. And I guess you know, if I could use the metaphor of baking bread, if the final product is a nice loaf of bread, then I think that this is the wheat we have to grind through to get us the flour to get us there. And I think it represents maybe 80% of the work we have to do, and in a sense sets the parameters for our, I guess, the first level of investigation. So I'm not going to walk through this, but all I did was cut and pasted the titles of all of the headings in the contract into this piece here. You'll see the guts of it that we're mainly interested in are in Section C, but if you go through in other areas, there are issues like intellectual property, terrorist financing, and issues like that. And so I think we have to do a triage process of going through and identifying those provisions of the contract that we likely will want to see continued. And then that can kind of form the focus of our work moving forward. I guess the other thing I would note is this contract, and I think there have been a couple of minor amendments from this version, but it is not, actually the contract has evolved over time, and certainly this version benefited from the substantial consultation that NTIA undertook in 2011. So I certainly don't see this process as an attempt to capture the static contract and make sure it continues, but rather to identify the key provisions we want to see maintained and also ensure that process of improvement that has been encouraged and, I guess, to a certain extent forced by NTIA is also captured in what we do. So in terms of practically speaking, I would propose just to go through and to do an initial triage of all of these sections and just to undertake just a first pass of what we think is relevant to our exercise, just to make sure we're not going to miss anything. And I suspect we'll end up mostly with those sections in C, but as I said, there are some others on security, intellectual property, et cetera. So that's my proposal to the group.
Thank you, Alan. While we let people digest that and come back with comment, we do have an online comment. Grace, could you read that out to us?
Sure. We have a comment from Guru Achara. His comment reads, "The ESSEC report draws our attention to the fact that the IANA functions contract incorporates by reference a 550-page long ICANN response to the NTIA request for proposal. For example, the ICANN response provides a description of the policy establishment processes it intends to follow. Therefore, in addition to the IANA functions contract, we also need to go through the ICANN response in detail and identify what aspects relate to the NAMES community."
Thank you. So much for just 65 pages. Okay, Are there, does anybody have any questions or comment? Please, sir.
I'm Sivasubramanian Muthuswamy from At Large. I want to know why we are paying so much attention to the clauses of the contract, because it's not the contract that is going to change, but only the oversight that is being transitioned. So even if NTIA has asked for an RFP, asked us to examine this, I feel that it's not necessary to pay attention to the contract, and this is not in transition. Only the oversight is in transition. Can you tell me why?
Would anyone else like to make a stab at answering that? Greg?
Well, my understanding is that the contract is going away, and that therefore the contract and the requirements that are set forth in the contract need to be replaced. There's not going to be a new counterparty that is being assigned the contract by the NTIA, or rather the contract itself will evaporate, and the concepts that need to be captured from the contract need to be placed elsewhere, and that's a key part of our job.
Yes, that's a great answer. And so my opinion is that the contract therefore forms, and I think this is where Alan's coming from, a natural framework for, rather than us starting with a clean slate, especially given the time pressures, but also given the substantial evolution that's gone into that contract in the past, that it provides us with a natural jumping off point of a framework to work with. Any other comments or related points?
Elise, and then the gentleman at the far end.
Thank you, Elise from the GAC again. Now I wanted to comment on the comment from ALAC, because it's also been discussed in the GAC and also in the hallways. It's going to be placed elsewhere, these responsibilities, and where? So we, the contract, as it says, is deleted. Oh, okay, thank you. The contract is deleted, but the functions and the responsibility of the IANA is not. So where will we place these responsibilities? So this goes to the basic, as you said, you want it just to be replaced, but someone else is going to have the oversight of the function today with the same description, the same responsibilities that they have today. If you delete it and you piece it up and you want to take some of it out, where and why do you want to take just some of it out and leave other things to be, you know, we have to sort out what concept we're going to work on further, another contract or just a description, or because somewhere it has to stand where what IANA is going to do.
Okay, my thoughts on this
so
is that...
So just as a quick point of order, we'll definitely allow clarification. So please continue, but in general, we want to continue to follow the order. But as a point of clarification, please go ahead, and then we'll go to the gentleman at the end.
Yeah, my thoughts on this is that we don't have to make the oversight transition complicated by looking at contract and assuming that there is going to be change, and whatever changes that need to be made in the clauses of the contract can happen post-transition. So anyway, the functions, as you say, are not going to change. So the contract also need not change, except for the title from NTA to ICANN. If, so far, it has been a contract from NTIA, and now it's going to be a contract between ICANN and the operator. And so the same thing could continue, and finer changes could be made post-transition. The focus of the oversight transition could be more on people, how the oversight is going to be organized, rather than on nuances and intricacies like this. And so these are relatively unimportant commercial aspects. These are my thoughts.
Thank you. Just a reminder that even if you've already once said your name and affiliation, there is a transcript and there are people online, so please, every time you speak, state your name and your affiliation. I'm going to enable one comment on this, and then I'm going to go to my very patient friend at the end here.
Elise from the GAC again. Now, that's, I think that is what we have to discuss. You say it's, I don't think it's going to be a contract, or we don't know that. We haven't discussed that. So we have a contract today. As you said, it runs out. So
it will be terminated.
Yeah.
Unless it's the decision of this group not to terminate it and to assign it.
So this is what we have to discuss. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen at the end. And I'll apologize to a number of the people at the end. I have to admit I forgot my glasses. So even the people I know I'm having troubles with. But one thing I can say is you're all a lot better looking at this point. So please, the gentleman at the end.
Thank you. This is Eduardo Diaz from ALAC. I have a suggestion about when we look at this contract, if we can categorize the items, like, for example, when we look at responsibility and respect for a stakeholder, that to me that looks more as to an accountability type of function instead of a related to the naming function as such. That will help, you know, look at these two things from the two different perspectives. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? And just I would again remind the participants from around the room, we do have the stand-up mic, so if there's any further comment from the folks not sitting at the table, that's also very much welcomed. Any further discussion on this? I think the important thing to note is this is a jumping-off point. It's not meant to be the end-all, be-all framework, but it does provide some structure for us to really initiate the conversation. No further comment on this point? Sorry, Greg?
Greg Shatton again, for the record, CSG, GNSO. The comment at the end of the table presupposes that even the accountability functions that are core to the NTIA contract are somehow not going to be part of our discussion. I'm, again, not convinced that that's the case, but I think that's something that we need to decide and clarify. Thanks.
Avery, I think. Thank you.
Yes, Avery Doria, NCSG, GNSO. I think that not only are the accountability issues part of the current contract, but indeed they are part of our charter in terms of ensuring that they are included. So unless we are just changing this contract from NTIA to ICANN, you know, to some other entity to ICANN, in whatever we present, we have to deal with those accountability issues. Now, that will have to be connected to the parallel process. That parallel process will have to go through its determination to figure out which of them are critical to the IANA and which of them are ICANN beyond IANA, and that will be separate. But then in somehow liaisoning between these two parallel processes, we have, I think, three parallel processes if we include ourselves. Basically, we have to make sure that their notion of accountability that's relevant to IANA and our notion of accountability that's relevant to IANA are the same. And so, you know, we have a lot of cross-parallel process work to do in doing this, but I think it has to be part of it all. Thanks.
The gentleman from Iran.
Thank you. My name is Orasli. I am not representative of GAC, but I'm GAC member, and I would like to comment. Unfortunately, we cannot agree that the contract remain as it is, but just change the title. Contract has been agreed between NTIA as a policymaker and ICANN as a policy implementer. Now the situation is changed. We have to review the contract, retain the element which is necessary, delete the element which is not necessary, and add the element which is not included in that, and it is required to be included when the transition is made. Thank you.
Lise.
Lise Fuhr, for the record, I'm from the CCNSO group, but I'm not a member. I agree with Avery that we really have to connect the processes with of accountability with our process, and I think it's very important that the solution we end up with, our solutions, are really tightly connected to the accountability process. I don't hear opposite from anyone, but I think the coordination, as Avery also mentioned, is very, very important, not for this first step, but from our next steps. This history writing we're doing now, I don't think is as important with the accountability. This is showing the present accountability, but the future, we really need to be in line and in scope with the two groups.
Thank you. And speaking of in scope, I think given where the conversation is going, it might actually be worth reflecting on what is in scope for this group in the charter that has been agreed by the relevant constituencies. And I would just draw your attention to the final sentence, which does provide, I think, some clarity here, although there's more that, of course, I'd encourage you to read. And that is, and I quote, "Accountability for the administration of the IANA functions is properly within scope of this working group." And it makes specific reference to the implementation and operational accountability of the IANA functions. And that is separate and distinct from the much broader ICANN accountability discussion that's going on in a parallel track. The Charter recognizes that parallel discussion and that there needs to be coordination between the two. Coordination between the two. But the scope here is around, again, the administration of the IANA functions, the operational and implementation and operational accountability. So I have Robert and then Milton.
Again, it's Robert Guerra from the ESSAC. I just want to endorse, I guess, the comments from Alan in regards to what are parts of the text that that could be developed, sections 1 and 2, over the next week, and I think others have mentioned that as well, too. I also just heard something in regards to reviewing the history of the IANA and the work that this group may want to do. I would like this group then to reference something that I posted on the work party on the mailing list that ESSAC has already done this. ESSAC 67 that came out in August and ESSAC 68 that just came out today reviews the IANA functions contract, both the short 50 plus version and the 500. Plus page version, and so that now that's available. So I think, let's get to what's on scope. Let's get writing as well, and and so I'm keen to, again, as I mentioned earlier, ways that we can talk about a work plan on the text that we think on existing stuff in the history and write that would be great to do on time. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert, and I would also just reiterate his comment for those of us on this involved in this issue. The ESSAC documents are well worth reading and very informative. Please take the time to do so. Milton.
Milton Mueller, Syracuse University, NCSG, and ICG. I want to go back to the coordination between the two accountability groups. I want to emphasize the degree to which the plan that you come up with affects very strongly the level of coordination required with the other group. Let's assume that the proposal coming out of this group says, we don't have to do anything. Basically, NTI just gives IANA to ICANN permanently. There's no replacement for their supervision. Then I think the message that the other accountability group has is that its outcome, the whole ball game rests with its outcome, and possibly other members in the community would not want the transition to take place at all until that other group was finished. Now let's go to the other extreme. Suppose this group that came up with a proposal says, We're taking IANA completely out of ICANN. It's no longer part of ICANN. It's a separate organization. Then you could say to the other group, take your time. Fix ICANN, but don't worry about the IANA transition because it doesn't really affect ICANN's accountability anymore. Now, those are deliberately two extreme examples, but I think you're going to probably end up somewhere in between those two things. But the question is, the broader accountability process for ICANN could take a very long time. Suppose they decide to reincorporate in Geneva. Suppose they decide to revamp the membership structure. All of that will take years, 2 or 3, 4 years maybe. Many of us would be quite unhappy if the transition was delayed for that long a period of time for some rather indeterminate changes that would be taking place in the future. So part of the coordination process would be, what kind of things can we do that would obviate the need for linking too tightly the outcomes of these two processes?
Thank you, Milton. And I think that's a very good observation. Again, and not to bore you with reading, but this within the charter itself, it does speak very specifically to recognizing that the two processes are interrelated and interdependent, and we should appropriately coordinate their work. And I reiterate that one to say that there is a distinction between coordinating and doing the work of accountability, and we will need to be very cognizant of that in this work group. Kieran.
Hi. Hello, Kieran McCarthy. I have a couple of pragmatic questions, so I'd like to help how I can with this. What I can do is I can write stuff and I can, communicate to people these things are happening. So in terms of actually producing the work, how are we going to do this? Is it going to be all on one mailing list? Are we going to be broken up into different groups? Are we going to use interactive online tools? Will we have a group of people who focus on keeping on track? How are we going to do it? Because my eyes glaze over the philosophical discussions. I like to sort of get into the weeds. That's what I like to do. I'd like to be told where to go and when to do it. I'm sure some others would as well. So if you give us some pragmatic details and focus attention, that'd be good.
Thanks for that offer, Kieran. And I think you've already heard coalescing around one piece of practical work, which is the work that Alan has kicked off. I don't have a view yet, and I'm open to suggestions as to how we break this down into smaller parcels of work. Currently, we are all on one mailing list, but clearly we will need to segment the work and take volunteers such as yourself who are willing and able. ICANN has also made it clear that they're willing to support this effort with the relevant staff support should we need it, or even, dare I say it, some form of expert or other skilled assistance. So I think that's something that we need to determine quickly, like everything else, but nevertheless still to be determined. Greg.
And Greg Shatton again. I think maybe it would be helpful, and we could even put it back on the screen, is to look at the list of the deliverables or deliverable sections that were required by the RFP. Maybe think about setting up subgroups for each deliverable section and revamping or adding a column to our workflow document where it just says continue deliberations for 6 meetings. We can also have a workflow for drafting of those. Maybe those would be decided, more granularly by those subgroups. But I think overall we have to set some milestones for submission of deliverables, drafts within the group, et cetera. And we may decide it's not. Some of the deliverables may have a longer timeline than other. The historical look back documents being factual. I think, as somebody suggested, I think Byron, that we even try to get them done by next week in a rough draft. But the core deliverable of what the future is going to look like is not going to be done by next week. So we'd put something longer on. But I think that's kind of the suggestion is, one, identify the deliverables, two, set up timelines and teams to work on them. Thank you.
Thank you. That seems like a good suggestion. We have an online comment. Grace?
Sure. We have a comment from Eric Iriate. His comment is, the impact in GTLD and CCTLDs will be different. This separation could be a practical way to work.
Thank you, Eric. Mathieu?
My name is Mathieu Veil. I am the CEO of AFNIC, the CCTLD manager for Dotifar. We're also operating in the GTLD space. I think we're sort of going around the key issue here, because when I listen to what's been said earlier, it's obvious that people are operating under different assumptions. Some people in the room apparently assume that the contract with IANA, between IANA and ICANN will disappear and mixed into something, and others have different expectations that it's going to be transferred to an external organization. I think Milton summed it up quite well with his extreme scenarios. And I don't see any work being currently envisaged onto building those scenarios, elaborating upon them. And my main concern, I don't see anything about how you will decide which is the scenario or the scenarios that you propose. So I would like to suggest things, because like Kieran, I like action. First thing would be list the scenarios. I think Milton started this. A number of people around the table, and I can definitely contribute to that, can list scenarios and have a parallel track about what would be the decision criteria. I may have missed this in the charter. I haven't read this very thoroughly, but I'm not sure there is consensus about what makes a scenario better than the other right now. And that would definitely be needed if we want to suggest something with a rationale that this scenario is better than others. And so I would definitely encourage a specific track, maybe a specific subgroup, to work on building those criteria. Thank you.
Thank you, Mathieu. Scenario analysis is a good suggestion. I would draw your attention to Section 5, which does speak to the decision-making process, so it does give some guidance on how the decision-making will transpire, but it certainly doesn't speak to scenario analysis, which would seem like a good idea. Any other comments?
Byron, I'll just respond to that point from Mathieu and others, you know, Greg's segmentation of the work, scenario planning. It feels to me like a sort of review of this meeting afterwards and trying to, I mean, there have been some very, very helpful pragmatic suggestions as well as some problems and issues raised, and it feels to me like a sort of structured review of the meeting and an attempt to produce what might be seen as a communique or a digest and put that out to the list in short order. So I think that's something we could work together with staff on, and that's probably, and then try and pull together the goodwill and the volunteer time that seems to be available to support those. And, you know, I think that feels to me like a good way of getting a practical outcome that others are seeking here. So I think we can try and do that and produce something which may require some tweaking once it's been sent out the list. But I think a careful review of what's been discussed here and the very helpful input would be the way to go. Thank you.
Any other comments? Milton?
Milton Mueller, Syracuse University. The scenarios, Jordan Carter of ISOC-NZ has already done a very useful diagram carving up the different functions and showing how they might be sliced, diced, divided among different organizations. So that conversation has been happening since March. And, of course, there's proposals on the table from our organization, Internet Governance Project, as well, which could go into that. But the most systematic mapping of options was indeed this diagram by Jordan Carter. So I would encourage you to look at that. And it's posted on our site and probably on the ISOC-NZ site also.
Thank you, Milton. I believe we have Paul Kane online, and we're going to try again to actually hear from him. And then Keith after Paul Kane. Unfortunately, it doesn't appear we're going to be able to hear from him directly, so I would ask Paul Kane if you could type in your comment and we will read it on your behalf. In the interim, Keith?
Keith Davidson.nz, CCNSO. Just to follow up on Milton's comments regarding the Internet NZ paper, I would be happy to post that to the ICG list and the CWG list therefore make it a reference material to those groups if that's okay with everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. That would be very helpful. Do we have Paul Kane's comment? He's typing. Oh, we're eagerly anticipating that. Martin?
Okay, Martin Butterman, Public Interest Registry, but speaking on my own behalf. Observer or participant, not a member. Basically, I like where this is going. It's beginning to move to more clarity. I think in general, just two remarks. One is, let's set it up as what it is for. It's to get the IANA function properly set up. Not per se how to make sure it can stay in ICANN, but so the scenario fits very well on that. Let's think of how we can best set it up so it serves the information, the internet community. And I don't see a better solution than ICANN, but hey, if you set it up like that and that is the outcome, it's even stronger. Second thing is whether we call how we call it contract or maybe even affirmation or whatever, doesn't matter. What we do need is a very clear description of what we understand that it should entail. Just those 2 points.
Thank you. Do we have Mr. Kane's comment yet?
This is a comment from Paul Kane. CCTLD community is very diverse. Some have never attended an ICANN meeting. Asking CCTLD managers for the type of solution they would like may be useful. We could conduct a survey as there may be a number of solutions. I am willing to assist in the drafting.
Thank you, Paul. Please go ahead.
Yes, okay. Van Huyt from the GACS. I'd like to ask about the item 3 of the RFP of ICG on the post-transitions oversight, how it will be addressed in the item 3, agenda item 3.
Well, I think, I mean, that seems to me to be the purpose of the group, right, is to deal that, and that, and there was a suggestion that we break these down into as being substantial work streams of the work of the group. So I'm not sure there's an answer to it yet. That's the RFP, that's the requirement, unless I'm misunderstanding, but that's the work that's got to be done in response to each of those points. I hope I'm not misunderstanding your point, but that's clearly sets out the scope of work, and that's one clear, in effect, work stream of this group based on the direction of the RFP from the ICG. Chuck.
Thanks. Chuck Gomes from the registries. I see number 3 as our work stream. I'm not sure that's segmentable. Am I missing something?
My only take, yes, that's the core deliverable, 100% right. But there is other work to be done, like a review of the documents or surfacing of all the... Those are other streams of work, but clearly number 3 is the key, is the mother load. Greg?
Greg Shatton, IPC, GNSO. I think then probably makes sense, but subject to further discussion, that item 3 be taken care of by a committee of the whole, rather than leaving out some people here to work on the less core deliverables. Thank you.
We are quickly winding down in terms of our time. I think we have another 5 minutes allocated, and not to put my co-chair on the spot, but some wrap-up comments. Are there, before we do that, can I canvass the room for any final comments or thoughts, and of course our friends and colleagues online? Any final comments or thoughts? Chuck.
Thanks. Chuck Gomes from the registries again. I think we need to decide, and we can do this on the list, or we can at least get a sense today how long our teleconference call is going to be. My own recommendation, even though I know it's not very popular, is to accomplish what we need to accomplish. We probably need to look at two-hour calls.
It's a very practical point. I mean, I'd come into this meeting thinking there had to be at least 90 minutes, certainly in excess of an hour. So that's a working assumption. I mean, I'm not quite sure we want to settle that by straw man, but I don't mind if anyone would like to make any comments on that. I mean, clearly we've got compressed timescale, frequent meetings, and length of meetings is one way of getting more work done. It's a question of productivity. So any comments on that? Greg?
Greg Shatton, IPC. I agree.
With the 2 hours?
I agree with the 2 hours. I was on a two-hour every week working group. I think it actually was very helpful because we really could dig into the back and forth much more without, you know, having to look at our watch and kind of speed along on things before we got to delve into them. Thank you.
Final comment, Keith, and then Jonathan's going to wrap it up for us.
Just Keith Davidson, .nz, CCNSO, ICG. Emphasising that point, I think 2 hours is the minimum, just given the complexities of the technology and times and so on. It takes 15 minutes for a meeting to start properly and so on. So 1 hour meetings fail to get to the meet or substance. So I think 2 hours is a fine time frame. Thank you.
Okay. So I don't think I can do a fully coherent summing up, and nor do I want to, but I think it's quite clear there's a number of very practical suggestions. There's some goodwill and concentrated effort in the room, and I sense a lot of willing volunteers, which is very encouraging, because certainly in it, from a kind of GNSO perspective, and I suspect to some extent, I shouldn't presume to say this, but from a sort of community-wide perspective, we all are suffering generally from work group fatigue and issues. So actually the fact that there are the level of competence and enthusiasm and willingness to participate is great. And so I think it's incumbent on probably myself and Byron, dare I say it, together with the staff that are supporting on this to try and come up with a sort of summary and capture some key outcomes from this, a sort of action list, if you like, including some of the very practical suggestions like the scenario planning, to obviously recognize the whole interrelationship and codependence subject to the sort of spectrum analysis that Milton talked about, the end stretches of the whole, of the end parameters of how this might work. We need regular and frequent meetings, so it feels like to me weekly two-hour meetings. We'll come back to you right away with a proposed face-to-face meeting and timing. I'm not sure we're going to be able to do something like settle it as democratically as we might like to via a typical doodle poll or something. I think there's going to have to be a bit of direction given and people move their agendas as best as possible and or participate remotely. But, you know, I'm highly sympathetic to trying to accommodate everyone's positions, but at the same time, if we're going to work with the kind of time pressures and, frankly, size of task in some ways, that we may need to just push on, as it were. So to the extent that you feel you haven't been able to be consulted about the specific time or timing of meetings, Byron did talk earlier about rotation. I'm not sure that equidistant participation at, for argument's sake, 8-hour intervals in a 24-hour day is the most sensible. I think an analysis of where participants are coming from and an attempt to recognize that and then stagger things. So I think we'll do some real practical things and try and drive this whole process forward. That's enough from me for now, I think. Greg, it sounds like you want to make a...
A mundane question. I had heard some discussion, and maybe it was in the GAC, that there might be a meeting with the ICG, perhaps on November 10th, or am I just hallucinating?
We have not heard anything to that effect as yet. I think you're hallucinating.
And it's only the first day.
So, the member from Iran?
Yes, a participant of this meeting. The reply was given to the representative of GAC relating to item 3, which have two elements. One element is oversight, and the other element is accountability arrangement. Was not quite clear. Let me just address the second one, accountability arrangement. A group is being formed with two tracks. Track one, accountability relating to the transition, and track two, overall accountability of ICANN. With respect to the track one, what is the arrangement and liaison of this group with that track or with the activity of that track, number one. Number two, the issue of the oversight. Gentleman said that it is addressed to the whole community, but you are among those community. How you will see the oversight after the transition as far as the names are referred? Who will take off that one? And how will be done? What would be the entity responsible for that? The answer was given was not convincing. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I would just like to say there is the other group on accountability. That track is being formed literally as we speak, and the first open session where ICANN is going to speak to it and we can have community input will happen today at 4 o'clock. So I would encourage you to participate in that one.
Byron?
Greg?
Greg Shatton again. My understanding in listening to the two tracks described by the gentleman from Iran is that track one is our responsibility, that there's not a second group being formed for IANA-related accountability. Second, as far as what the other questions that were asked, those are very appropriate questions, and those are really the questions that this group has to deal with. Thank you.
Agreed. I took it as the general ICANN accountability issue, and the substance of question number two is the substance of this working group. So with that, I think we will call this meeting to a close. Thank you very much. I think it was very productive. And look to your lists as the information starts to flow. Thank you.